KALW.
From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents. Context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
I'm from the East Bay, from Concord.
Fruitvale, East Oakland.
I'm from Milpitas.
Berkeley.
Coming up, if you're an independent contractor, there's a tax you might not even know about.
Did you do that for 7 days or more in a year? And if you did, congratulations, you're a business. Now you owe the city a tax.
Then the first in our series of interviews with San Francisco's mayoral candidates. We're talking with Richie Greenberg.
The conservative voter bloc is coming alive, and I urge everyone who is even right-leaning to vote.
And a Bay Area filmmaker's dark comedy about how a Filipino-American family deals with domestic violence.
People might take me to task, saying like, well, you know, I don't know, like, this is a really unpleasant story. Do you want to be telling these Filipino stories like this? But the Filipino-Americans in the audience are always like, yes!
That's all next, today on Cross Currents. You might think that once you pass the April 15th tax deadline, you're done with taxes for the year. But hold on. If you're a business in San Francisco, your taxes to the city are due next week on May 31st. And there's a group of small businesses that might not even realize that they are small businesses. They're independent contractors. You confused? Well, our economics reporter, Jeremy Dalmas, will explain.
I'm at Market on 10th Street in San Francisco, checking on who might not be paying their taxes. Eddie Skies is walking by the Twitter building. He's an independent contractor in real estate sales.
Yeah, mostly in the Bay Area, focusing on sale of new construction condominiums. So I work on behalf of developers selling their new projects, and it's a lot of fun.
Do you know about and do you pay local municipal business taxes?
I do not.
It's true. If you're an independent contractor, you are a business. And if you're a business, most cities require you to pay municipal taxes. This is separate from the money you pay to the IRS or the state of California. But it's a bit of a secret.
You found another person that doesn't know about it.
This tax is news to all the independent contractors I talk to. And have you heard of paying municipal taxes to the city of San Francisco?
No.
I have not heard of that, no.
I have no idea.
Some people don't even understand what I'm talking about. It's a bit complicated. So I head a few blocks over to City Hall.
I'm Amanda Kahn-Fried. I work on policy and communications for the Treasurer in San Francisco.
Fried says while this is technically a tax, San Francisco calls it a business registration. And if you go to the city's website, it's pretty clear. If you're an independent contractor and you work in San Francisco for at least 7 days out of the year, you legally have to pay. Whether that's office work or catering or being a freelance journalist or picking up small gigs off an app.
For the regular person who is wondering, oh, I signed up on this platform and I went to somebody's house and I helped them hang their flat screen TV and I weeded their yard and somebody else asked me to, you know, pick up a package at the Gap and bring it to their office. My question back would be, did you do that for 7 days or more in a year? And if you did, congratulations, you're a business. And now you owe the city a tax.
Congratulations indeed. And this applies if the work you did took place in San Francisco. It doesn't matter if you live here or not. But don't worry, most other cities have this tax too. If you work in, say, Oakland or San Jose, you have to pay up there.
And, you know, that's news to many people.
This adds to a list of disadvantages that independent contractors have that normal employees don't. Things like labor protections, overtime pay, workers' compensation, and unemployment insurance. So now that you know about the tax, you're probably wondering how much you have to pay. In San Francisco, if you make under $100,000 a year, you owe $91. Earn more than that, and it goes up, depending on how much you make. You can pay it online, and Fried walks me through it.
So we are here at the Treasurer's main site, sftreasurer.org.
After we fill out a mock application, I get emailed a registration.
Once you sign it, you are officially a business, which is very exciting. And your first order of business as your welcome package to San Francisco is a bill, which we will email you within the hour.
How exciting. But there's a catch. If you've been a contractor for years and haven't paid and the city finds out, you owe back taxes, and there can be stiff penalties. Don't worry, the city's website will automatically calculate it all out for you. It can add up quickly, though. Let's say you started as an independent contractor 3 years ago, and you're just now registering with the city. You would owe over $800. The longer it's been, the more you owe.
Late penalties are there for a reason, because we want to really even the playing field. If, you know, oops, you get caught and there's no penalty, then why be timely in the first place? And this is, you know, this is the law.
You are legally required to pay your taxes. Not knowing about them isn't an excuse to the IRS, and it isn't an excuse to the treasurer of San Francisco. How many people aren't paying the tax? It's hard to pinpoint because the city doesn't know about them. But right now, there are around 73,000 of these independent contractors registered in San Francisco. And they bring in around $7 million a year, and that all goes to the general fund. Back on Market Street, I asked bicycle courier Cameron Talbot if he knows about this tax.
No, I was not aware of that.
He works partially as an employee, but also supplements his income as an independent contractor. So you're surprised by this then?
I'm actually kind of processing it right now. I don't even really know what to think. It's like, I already pay so much to live here. I feel like I already get a lot of taxes taken out. Bummer. That's all I can really say.
What steps is the city doing to get people to register? Amanda Confried says they're considering an advertising campaign, but more proactively, they can, in some cases, get information from large corporations that operate in San Francisco. For example, in 2016, they sent letters to 37,000 Uber and Lyft drivers that they suspected were working in the city and told them to pay up. This is a hot topic. In the past 6 years, the number of independent contractors in San Francisco has increased by 60%. A lot of that is because of people working in the gig economy. All of this made me want to ask Amanda Confried if she had ever been an independent contractor herself.
No, I never have. My husband was a freelance journalist for some time back in the day. I am quite certain he did not register.
Oh.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about that working for the Treasury in San Francisco?
Well, I understand. He was a hot mess. He was 25. He didn't know. And that's who we need to do a better job of reaching out. He absolutely would have filed and paid had he known.
If only he had known. Then he would have had the honor of registering as a business and the excitement of paying municipal taxes. In San Francisco Civic Center, this is Jeremy Dalmas for Cross Currents.
May 31st is the deadline for independent contractors to renew their registration with the City of San Francisco. If you're curious about paying your business taxes, we have a link to the San Francisco Treasurer's website up at kalw.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Well, speaking of deadlines, today is the last day Californians can register to vote for the next election. That's important. Election Day is Tuesday, June 5th. And in San Francisco, as you probably know, we're electing a new mayor. It's a ranked choice vote, which means if the frontrunner doesn't get half the votes, second and even third choices get considered. That gives each of the eight candidates a chance. Over the next couple of weeks, we'll hear from them all. Today, Richie Greenberg. Here's why he thinks he should be the next mayor.
I am going to bring to the mayor's office three core values, which is sorely lacking here in San Francisco. The first thing is accountability. Second is law and order. Third is quality of life. And so using my experience in the private sector as a startup consultant and advisor, where I've built coalitions, and helping people from all walks of life, all nationalities, religions, national origins, and local, to work together to, let's look at the three things, the accountability. We have been lacking accountability in City Hall, lacking accountability of all the department heads, lacking accountability by the nonprofit organizations, the homelessness outreach organizations. Money is being spent uncontrollably. Law and order also needs to be brought in. And I propose all different changes to ensure that we will change our quality of life once I get elected.
That's Richie Greenberg. The resident of the Richmond District is the only Republican in the field, and I spoke with him at length about his candidacy. Here's part of our conversation.
And so we're one of the few cities that designates resources and public defenders towards legal aid for undocumented immigrants. Would you plan to change how funds or personnel are directed?
Yes, I would. I would.
In
I
what
would.
Way?
Well, this is interesting because from a standpoint of what Sanctuary City is, what immigration issues are. These are personal issues, like getting divorced, okay? And San Francisco nor the state have any jurisdiction to be enforcing federal laws in terms of immigration. So San Francisco does not issue passports, does not issue visas, does not make adjustments to immigration status. And so therefore, we should not be taking on any role that would be not our jurisdiction to begin with. And so we should not be using public funds, taxpayers' funds, to be one way or another dealing with an issue that is not our jurisdiction.
So that would apply both to, say, cooperating with ICE agents, having our law enforcement cooperating with them and what they want, as well as on the other side, public defenders.
Working. No, not correct. Hmm. I have read many of the memorandums of understanding, the operations of how cooperation between local jurisdictions, the San Francisco Police Department and other agencies, with the federal or state, how it's supposed to work, who's supposed to be paying for that, the cooperation, communications, coordination, and a lot of that is misunderstood by San Franciscans, by leaders in City Hall, by other activists, and so what you had said is not correct. We do need to cooperate and coordinate with the federal government, but not going after those families and children who are simply undocumented. I'm talking about focusing on those fugitive aliens. That's something different. And then I do not want to continue funding any of the lawyers' specialty departments that are defending those who have been arrested by ICE. I do not want to be funding that either, because that is using public funds, taxpayers' money, to fund something that is not our jurisdiction.
The line that you're drawing seems like it's not so black and white in reality.
The world is not black and white. Life is not black and white. And that's one of the problems that I aim to change here as mayor, is that we are so polarized. The society here is so polarized in this just overall on so many issues that everything has to be black and white, yes or no, left or right, on or off, and that is not how life really is. We need to be open to compromise. We need to be open to the gray areas in between, in the middle, because that's where the majority of people actually are. All the hotheads on both ends are the ones that are causing the most problems. They're the ones who are yelling the most on a variety of issues.
But it seems like when it comes to undocumented immigration, you are drawing a black and white line. But how would you tell who is
I'm sure
advocates would argue, right, say, well, this person is a family person.
ICE often will come in an action with a list of those who are that need to be arrested on extradition from other countries. So I support that. I definitely support that.
We're going to conclude with a lightning round.
Okay.
Ready?
Boxer, a brief? Brief. Okay.
Legalized adult use recreational marijuana.
It's already law. So, yes, but it has to be in
good or bad.
Good or bad. I am fearful of both public safety, what's going to happen with DUI and such driving while high. And also, I don't like having pot dispensaries and retail storefronts in neighborhoods where children and schools are.
Okay. Charter schools versus conventional schools?
Charter schools and conventional schools, both.
The Golden State Warriors coming to San Francisco.
It's fine. They were here before, weren't they?
It's true. The Central Subway.
Get it finished already, put it into service, and move on.
How mid Market Street changed during the Lee administration?
Good and bad. It cleaned it up, but But because of the Twitter tax, that's coming to an end next year also. So we're going to see what's going to happen once that's taken away.
Electric scooters.
Looks like a lot of fun. I haven't been on one yet, but I don't like them littering the sidewalk, so we have to come up with a compromise and figure out how to allow them to stay here.
Being a Republican in San Francisco.
Absolutely awesome. I'm loving it. The conservative faction and voter bloc is coming alive. I didn't realize that I'm now becoming the face of Republicanism in this city.
Well, you're the only Republican mayor.
Exactly. We have, we've come alive, and I urge everyone who is even right-leaning to vote.
Donald Trump.
So, he was a great talk show or reality show leader. There are many people in the Republican Party that like him still and those that don't like him.
How about you?
I like him and don't like him. That I would hope, and I think a lot of people hoped, that when he was finally elected that he would change a little bit. He hasn't. Some people still like that. I don't like the brashness as much. I think, though, that a lot of what he's done for the country so far, other than trigger a lot of people on the left, that if you just look at his what's actually happened with the economy and taking a stand, that is good. And if... You know, to be fair, if this was a different person in, that everyone else would cheer. But just because it was him, this is where he's getting the bad rap.
What do you hate most about San Francisco?
Oh, boy. The dirtiness.
What do you love most about San Francisco?
The environment, the scenes, the vistas, and the natural beauty.
And what do you think needs to change about how San Francisco's been governed in the last few decades?
Accountability. And the Board of Supervisors has not been reined in because there's been no checks and balances between the mayorship and the well, they're two different departments. They're two different branches. Executive is the mayor, and the Board of Supervisors is the legislative, but they've been acting as if they're the mayor, and they've been trying slowly to take away power from the mayor.
That's an excerpt of my conversation with San Francisco mayoral candidate Richie Greenberg. I also asked him about housing.
So this is one of those situations that you can't just build your way out of it.
Homelessness?
I would declare a state of emergency within days of me being sworn in.
And policing?
The number of active officers in the field are way below what we need in order to take care of and serve the population level that we're at right now.
Hear my conversation with San Francisco mayoral candidate Richie Greenberg in its entirety at KALW.org. This is Cross Currents. I'm Ben Trefney, in for Hannah Baba. Filmmaker H.P. Mendoza's first movie, Colma the Musical, is an indie hit turned cult favorite. H.P.'s newest movie just premiered this month at the Center for Asian American Media's Film Festival, or CAMFest. The film is called Bitter Melon. It's a tragicomedy set in San Francisco's Mission District, and it follows a Filipino-American family plotting a murder. HP came to KALW Studios to talk with Jen Chien about making the film.
The movie is described as a dark comedy, but it also has elements of horror. It's dramatic at times. How did you think about balancing those tones?
Balancing the horrific elements and the drama with the comedy is not something that came to me that naturally when I wrote it back in 1997. I mean, if I could be honest, I was...
So this is a story that you've been chewing on for a long time.
I mean, it's you know, I didn't chew on it enough when I first wrote it in 1997. I was 21 years old, and I thought I knew everything. I'm an expert storyteller, and I wrote this wacky black comedy. And what did I know about black comedy at the time? But I think as the years went on, I would kind of revisit this story. I realized, it doesn't feel dark because I'm constantly forcing people to laugh at it. Laughing uncomfortably at something dark doesn't make something dark. You know what I mean? It actually lessens the impact. And I thought, no, I really actually want Bitter Melon to feel dark. And how do I do that? And in this final draft of this script, I think what happened was I let the things that are funny be funny and the things that are dark actually be dark. Like, honor the drama, right? The original script was categorized as a dark comedy and the new one's a tragic comedy.
One of the first lines in this new movie, which the mom of the family says, is,
"Diva,
I don't know how you could even live with Troy. I'd be so depressed."
"Depression is for white people."
"Depression is for white people. Okay, Auntie."
So can we just unpack that a little bit and tell me why you put that, like, why is that at the beginning of the movie? Does that mean something?
It's because it's called back. You know, it's a thread in the film. This idea that, you know, this Filipino-American family can kind of live in this bubble. And once anyone moves out of it and goes out into the world, they're kind of ridiculed for adopting things that might not be so Filipino-American, like, I don't know, organic food or like the concept of gentrification. One of those things might be depression. It's kind of this thing. It's like, look, brown people don't have time to be depressed. That's a white construct. And so I like the idea that the lead character might have depressive tendencies and the mother kind of diminutizing it.
And is that something that comes from your own life?
I think it's something that a lot of people I grew up with went through. I don't want to make too much of a statement out of it because, I mean, that's the reason why it's a joke mm-hmm. in the film. Because I think that by the end of the movie, everyone kind of embraces that depression is very much a real thing, you know? And it's something that I also think a lot of people in my own family, a lot of the baby boomers in my family, they used to think of it as something that was just a white construct. And suddenly they're like, no, there's something to this. I'm not doing so well. I think I need to, I think I might, maybe I do need a psychologist. And I'm like, hey, let's split the difference. How about you just exercise?
Right,
you
know? Right. And, or talk to your family about your feelings.
Not be so Asian about it. Like, maybe you can actually open your heart and talk, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Because there just isn't that much media still about Filipino Americans. Do you feel a pressure, either internally or externally, to be representing this community fully?
Every movie that I have is kind of like just to the left of center, you know, that where I don't feel like I need to represent a whole swath. That is, I guess, a danger, right? Because I have been taken to task for that. You know, I'll never forget, like, the Philippine News.
By the Filipino-American community.
Yeah. Like, the Philippine News, like, they just, like, did not like Colma. They're like, why are these kids smoking marijuana on the hill? And why are they drinking illegally? Or, you know, they're sneaking into bars.
As in, this is showing a bad image of our people.
Right. And I remember the one thing that got to me was, like, Filipino kids don't do that. And I was like, we did, you know, like, if you do you want me to write a personal story or not, mm-hmm. you know? And I think for Bitter Melon, I think a lot of people were expecting it, like they're, oh, this will be the one where you show what a Filipino-American family is all about. And from the get-go, you know that this family is going to go off the rails. You know, I want to hint to it as much as possible.
At the same, or maybe on the other side, do you get people coming up to you and saying, you've really represented me?
With Bitter Melon, we've had a few test screenings and a couple of sneak previews, and people might take me to task during these test screenings saying, like, well, you know, I don't know, like, this is a really unpleasant story. Do you want to be telling these Filipino stories like this? But the Filipino Americans in the audience are always like, yes, we actually want this. We don't want after-school specials.
This is getting to something true for
right.
them.
Right, yeah. Our last test screening, we actually had like a bunch of other Filipino filmmakers come. And the interesting thing there was a lot of the Filipino filmmakers who came were documentary filmmakers, and they were conflicted. They didn't know how they felt about seeing a family like that in an artistic context. You know what I mean?
What way?
Well, there's a lot of room for ambiguity and a lot of room for interpretation. And I think a lot of documentary filmmakers, like, they say, like, no, you have to provide solutions. I'm like, no, I actually want to provide a space to talk. If I wanted to be prescriptive about what to do about domestic violence, I know a number you should call. You know what I mean? We know what to do. But my question is, if we all know what to do, why aren't we doing anything about it? And that's where I think a lot of people feel really uncomfortable about it.
You wrote this original screenplay 20 years ago, a little over 20 years ago.
Yeah.
So looking at it now, at the completed piece, do you feel like it reached its potential? Did it do all right?
I think it did all right. I think it did. I mean, you know, I'm really proud of it. I think it's better than I originally intended. And a lot of that was because I allowed it to breathe and I gave it time to sort of gestate. Wherever the movie graduates to, I'll always be proud of this baby.
That's filmmaker H.P. Mendoza speaking with KALW's Jen Sheehan. Bitter Melon premiered this month at CamFest, and there's one more screening. That's Wednesday at Oakland's Piedmont Theater. Find the deets at kalw.org. Today's Cross Currents team includes Nina Gensler-Debs, Angela Johnston, Amber Miles, Lisa Morehouse, Truk Nguyen, Marissa Ortega-Welch, and Josh Wilson. Our engineers are James Rollins, Gabe Graben, and Jackie Sojiko. The line producer is Hannah Kingsley Ma. Our managing editor is Jen Chien. Our opening theme music is by the John Santos Quintet. You're listening to Fine Points from San Francisco. They perform tomorrow night at the Cornerstone in Berkeley. The show starts at 8:30 p.m. and hey, it's open to all ages. For Cross Currents, I'm Ben Treffney.